Information about the world of running, inspiration to fuel passion and excellence, and ideas for making connections and finding community. You're listening to A to Z Running. Welcome back, everyone, to the A to Z Running podcast, where we help runners thrive. I'm Andy.
And I am Zach. And on the show today, USA Trail Running champ Mario Mendoza joins us to discuss the repetitiveness of long distance running. And being that, he's also set the 50K and 100K world records for treadmill running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows what it's like to run repetitively.
Yes, he does.
And has some good practical suggestions and tips. Good things all around. And after that, stick around for the World of Running update that includes some interesting world records, fascinating things to discuss, and a sneak peek at an upcoming guest. And for all of the great things, first, go to atozrunning.com, look for the word follow, and then find us on all the places you like to consume your content. We're in the podcast places, we're in YouTube, we're on the social medias.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, this week on one of those social medias, on Instagram to be specific, we posted about McKenna Morley and how she likes to go skinning. Do you know what that is?
I don't know that I should be hearing this.
I'm pretty sure that somebody thought it was a mistake early on because I got a couple questions about it.
My first thought
is a real thing.
Probably taking skin off animals. That's what I'm assuming. I just don't know if it's legal.
Okay. Well, skinning is the act of skiing up a hill or a level surface. If you want to skin, you have to have special bindings on your skis. There's a sticky side and it goes in the snow and it glides along as you do, but it also will... they'll clip your skis so they don't fall off.
So in other words, uphill or cross-country skiing.
Yeah, and you can like walk more with them, I think, if you're going uphill.
So in other words, walking.
Uphill. Yeah, it's
so
awesome.
Why is it that people do this? Sports do this all the time, and I've never understood. Why do they have to make up a new name for a sport that is clearly already a thing? It's just uphill skiing instead of downhill skiing.
Oh.
Right?
Pretty cool. So McKenna does that. She was our previous podcast guest. She's a pro runner, and she suggests doing hobbies, finding hobbies you love. So I asked all of you what your hobbies are, and there's too many to mention, but Liz told us she enjoys the forgotten skills like sewing, canning, and crocheting.
Wait, hang on. Is that what they're called?
Well, she put forgotten skills.
Because
it just kind of skipped a generation, and so she's back doing these, and she actually teaches others to do them too.
I like the forgotten skill of hunting and gathering.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, wait, no. Some are hunters and some are gatherers, so I have to pick one, don't I?
I don't know. So Pete does astronomy, and he takes pictures of the
night sky exceptionally from his
backyard observatory. So if you follow me on my personal account, every time he posts a new post, I'm like resharing that because it's super cool.
Hey, Pete, NASA called. They want your stuff.
I mean, it's really, really good. And then Carl enjoys woodworking, and he showed a picture of some really cool pieces on Facebook. So that was
very practical skill.
Yeah. So there's lots of others too. Thanks for sharing. I love to hear what you guys all do. I mentioned that Zach and I like to sing. Probably I enjoy it.
Oh,
more
wait,
than
you claimed that I have hobbies other than running? She was lying.
Yeah, that's not, he does
Who
love
has
it.
Time
He's good at it
for anything else.
He's got a beautiful tenor voice.
Wow, that's embarrassing. None of you wanted to hear her say that about me.
So another thing, I got some great tips for running in the dark that I will be sharing soon on atozrunning.com. Speaking of articles, we just posted an article with gifts for runners because the holidays are approaching. And some of those include our sponsors, such as this week, the Hip Hook. I talked about it last week.
Aletha.
And it is something I've been telling everyone about because it's helped me a lot with my hip flexor issues that I've been having. The iliacus and psoas are just so hard to get to, and this tool has helped me release it, which has been phenomenal because it increases my mobility, decreases my discomfort, which is a good thing to do. And my sleep has improved, which is enormous. Many of you guys know that recovery and sleep go hand in hand. So very thankful for this tool. It's the Hip Hook
by Aletha. And since Andy shared an uncomfortable thing about me, I'll share something odd about her.
Oh goodness.
Without her even knowing what it's going to be. So Andy does this thing where basically anytime she experiences something that she enjoys or that's good, she acts like it's the first time she's ever experienced that. It's really quite an interesting thing. So every single time Andy uses the Hip Hook, on a daily basis. Every single time she gets off and she goes, wow, I feel so much better. And then she basically describes this sensation. Like, it's the first time I've heard her describe this sensation, and it's the first time she's ever felt it. And I think to myself,
it's that good, guys.
It was good the last 100 times, too.
You know, I'm enthusiastic about things that work and things that help us thrive more, and that's really, I'm sharing with you.
You can try to recover it all you want, Andy, but it's
helping me
funny.
Thrive right now.
That so, it is, in fact, helping.
Check out The Hip Hook.
By Aletha.
As mentioned, this week we're talking about embracing repetition. And our guest, Mario Mendoza, is a pastor and professional runner. He's a 5-time USA Trail National Champion and 4-time USA Trail Runner of the Year. He's held the 50K and 100K treadmill world records.
Oh, yeah.
He's a guru of distance running with dozens of wins and several course records. Mendoza has completed... He's been competing on 6 different world championship teams for Team USA. And because both Mario's parents are from Mexico and Mario was born in California and grew up on an avocado ranch, Mario is a cultural bridge builder. Hmm. From outreach to running camps, his world record runs, in fact, and so much more, Mario uses...
He was building bridges while he ran those runs? Amazing.
I mean, in the figurative sense, he was. He had people in the gym. Like, it was a really cool thing. I can link
that
to those videos. And Mario uses running to build community. So from mental strategies to physical considerations involving running with many miles, you're going to take away practical advice for embracing repetition. Let's talk to Mario. Mario, thanks for coming on the A to Z Running Podcast.
I'm really excited. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're thrilled because we know how busy it can be being a dad, you're a ministry leader, you're an ultra runner, so many things that you do. So we know your time is precious. And so we're so excited for you to come and share with our audience about repetition and how to embrace it, overcome it, whatever word you want to use. But there's a lot of repetition in ultra running. And I told the audience before we hopped on, just how experienced you are in it, being a 5-time US champion in trail running and the 50K world record that you held in 2020. So let's just dive right into the physical aspect. Like, how do you overcome and embrace the repetition of running the miles?
Yeah, I think there has to be some type of joy you're getting from it, right? Sometimes joy doesn't necessarily mean you're happy the whole time, but if you have something that I think you like put at the end of this training block or at the end of this race that you know you're going to receive, it really makes the journey a lot more worth it. And those days that are hard, you know, you think about that joy and that end result, because there are hard days. There's going to be some tough days. And one of my rules is on those tough days where I am really questioning things, I really tell myself, you know what, this isn't the day to be questioning things. Like, if I want to question things, it has to be on a good day. So that's a rule that I have for myself.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Because on the hard days, it's so easy to find the flaws in what we're doing or to find our reasons why not.
Exactly.
So evaluating things when we're in a healthy mind space and emotionally in a good space, that's really great advice. Now, you run trails, obviously, but you've also run on the treadmill. How do your techniques vary from the trail to the treadmill? How's it different?
It honestly is such a very drastic different discipline. And other than the fact that you're doing high heart rate or pushing yourself for a long period of time, the rest is really, really different. Like, when you're running flat on a treadmill or even some of those long track races, like the 6-hour, 12-hour, 24-hour, which I've never done a 24-hour. That sounds a little scary to me. But all of that is just very, very repetitive. You're going to move in the exact same way almost, even if you're trying to kind of compensate a little bit or shuffle a little bit differently, you're going to be hitting the exact same muscles and motions over and over and over. And so you almost have to be like very strong in just one specific way, where when you're on a trail, the more the trail has a variation in the elevation and the more like climbs and downhills it has and turns, it's just really shifting your weight and your the way you use your body and your strength to different motions and different sides. And I personally like that better, but there are times in my career where, because I do so much of that, I start kind of getting like little like overuse, you know, injuries or something, where like I'm just starting to feel, maybe because when you're on a trail, you're really having to shift a little bit and you're trying to stabilize. So some of my stabilizing muscles start to get tired. And when I find that, I just find like I need to switch it up. And to keep myself motivated, I set a goal that is flat, you know, something, some type of distance in the ultra range from 31 miles to sometimes 100 miles that is flat, and it's going to keep me motivated to train well, but now on flat terrain versus hilly terrain. And I just really try to keep that mindset of, it's going to be a different thing, but it's still fun and it's still motivating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love your Instagram feed with the pictures of you in the mountains. It seems like that's a place you really thrive.
Yeah.
In the mountains. So when you did the treadmill race or the attempt, how did you stay engaged when it seems like the mountains is really a place where you love? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're very different.
It's a great question. And you know, when I did the 50K, it was kind of a blessing that I had so many people around me. Like, a lot of just the high school was behind it, and the teachers and the principal. And so that helped me stay engaged, because I was in the middle of a gym and had people there around me, and I had to focus on my run, but I felt like I was drawing energy from them, right? So that was really, really helpful. But when I did the 100K treadmill record, that one was about 6 months later, and that was during COVID, and we were in a gym staring at just a window. And so that was pretty hard, because like mentally it was already hard to do the 50K one. And then I knew I had to go twice the distance, that I could only slow down. It was 40 seconds per mile to get the record for that one. And so I was a little bit like kind of worried and felt like maybe I was trying to be too ambitious. But I think that breaking it up into smaller pieces, like first breaking it up into a manageable chunk, 20 miles I know I can do, and then I broke it down to 10 miles, and then I broke it down to 5 miles, and then I just went 1 mile at a time when it just got super, super tough. And I just kept telling myself, can I do one more mile? Can I do one more mile? And I think that's what helps. I think that because you're on a flat terrain like a treadmill, or if somebody's doing a long track race, you're having to pace yourself. You got to stay in the moment. You've got to be caught and be present in where you're at versus thinking about how much you still have left. So yeah, we're in a mountain race. You can kind of think of like, okay, like I got this climb next, or this section is coming up, and I can visualize it. I really think in the flat stuff, there's not a lot of visualization because it's all so similar. And so more of it is like, how do I keep myself in a happy place where I am? How do I make this very comfortable and to some extent, you know, joyful and fun?
Yeah. That's an interesting concept of having there be a pace that you're imposing on yourself via a machine, right? versus running by feel and effort on a varied terrain. Those seem like just the endeavor seems very different, like as you were saying. So when you were doing the treadmill work and that repetition was going, how did you vary things for yourself? Did you change the elevation? Did you change your speed? What was that like?
For both of the records, it was pretty consistent pacing. I know some guys have tried to start out a little slower and speed up, and then some guys have kind of gone for it and then just try to bank some time. I've always found that I just do better, like pretty even pacing, if anything, maybe a little bit of a pickup at the end. So I was down by, it was 50 seconds in the 100K world record, and I only had 12 miles to go. So I knew I had to pick it up. So I had to take a risk. And so I did. And at the end, I actually ended up not only catching up to the record, but then I beat it by 70 seconds. So it was like kind of cool to see that when I picked it up, I actually was still feeling okay, even though I was hurting. It didn't put me in a worse place. But part of that, I think, is really enjoying where you're at, like really making sure you're taking care of your body, making sure you're taking the nutrition, the hydration, but that your mind is in a really good place. I've had a lot of people that have said, you know, man, after like those records, like it just shows you must be just like this mental monster, right? Like you must just have this really great mentality. And I don't necessarily think that. I think a lot of it was more the preparation. It's knowing that the mind is also something that we exercise, and the days leading up to it, I really rested my mind. I really wanted to clear my mind and know that I was going to need it fully that day. And so I needed to disengage. I needed to put it in a place of peace and really taking off the pressure of like, hey, this is tough. And it, you know, just cause like I like for the 100K, I'd already hit the 50K. So everyone just thought I'm gonna get the 100K one too. And the reality is I actually thought I had less of a chance to get the 100K, and somehow I did get that one, but then I missed the 100-mile one. So, you know, it's, you just never know. Like you have to be okay with failure, and you have to be enjoying where you're at. Yeah.
Well, that's a great transition into that mental aspect of repetition. And I've read a lot of how you enter into races, but I'd love for our audience to hear from you what your purpose is for your running is. And then during races, you spoke about, you know, how you stay engaged. I'd like to hear more details about that.
Yeah. So, you know, that question, it don't get asked a lot, but I love it. And I have to be honest, I have to, you know, tell you that, you know, years ago, I felt like I was kind of running off of some bitterness. I was like angry because, you know, I had a lot of success early in my career, and still seem to always have a lot of trouble finding like a good sponsor, or like help, you know, to be able to do more. And so for a few years, I wasted them really trying to kind of run on this like bitterness and wanting to prove myself. And so I came to a point in my mid 20s where I was like, you know, if I'm going to run for that, like, I need to stop. Like this, it's not even worth it. Like it was actually not even fun for me. And I wasn't enjoying even some of the good races that I had. And so I was like, if I'm not running anymore for like something that matters and for others and for my faith, most importantly, it's like, then I shouldn't even run. And so I basically just told myself that, and it took time to really, really live it out. But I just told myself that from now on, purpose behind why I run is to inspire some of those, you know, young kids that are probably overlooked and that need hope and that need somebody to encourage them. And so I want to run for them, and I want to run for my faith. And I think about that so much because it inspires me and just inspires me following the champion that I follow and what he did. And so I just try to imitate, you know, him and that. And I try to make my running about, you know, persevering and knowing that in that suffering, something good's going to happen. And there's been a gift there for me that sometimes I don't expect. You know, I finish these races and I'm like, all right, that's it. Like, I suffered, I made it. What's going to happen? And then suddenly something cool will happen and there'll be more fruit from it than I expected. So I appreciate that question.
That's such a profound answer, because there are times that I can think of in my life where I was driven by, you know, not wanting to let people down, like fear. So, you know, you had a time where you're running for, you know, there's some bitterness there and it was like, I just have to prove it so that you see me, you know, see me because I'm working really hard for this, you know? And I can resonate with that. And I think a lot of our audience can too. You know, there's times where we do things and it's, you know, obligatory, or it's not out of a place of freedom. Mm-hmm. It's out of a place of bondage. And so I appreciate you sharing that. And I read something that was really profound, or I actually heard you say it in a video, but you said, because your way is difficult, it doesn't mean it's the wrong path.
Yeah.
Would you expound more on that? I thought that was really a cool thing you said.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sometimes in this life, you know, we're called to do something and we kind of feel it, but we get discouraged when it's not going well right away. And, we kind of just start thinking, oh, maybe that wasn't it, you know, maybe this wasn't the way I was supposed to go. And I wasn't supposed to start this thing. And the problem is if we give up too early, we don't see what it's doing. You know, we don't see, that long-term effect. And that's what I've found in my life, is like some of these things that are just really doing some cool stuff now, they had their rough patches and times where I had even people that discouraged me and people that said that that wasn't even worth fighting for. And I even had people that said I wasn't a good runner when I was younger, you know, little things like that, that I remember now. And if I would have listened to that, or if I would have listened to my own doubts, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I think that is something we can apply, that if we really believe in something and we love it and we know that long-term it's going to do something, it's worth sticking through it. And it's worth having patience and perseverance, because once that fruit comes, it's probably some of the most rewarding things we'll ever do, to see it all the way through.
Hmm. Can you talk us through some of the moments where it was clear to you that this was the path for you?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I remember on the running side, I remember the Moab Trail Championships, the first time I won it. I remember I was running up the steepest hill in the course, and I was running behind like just the legend of Joe Gray, who's, you know, won 2 world championships and is just a phenomenal runner. And I just remember thinking, like, you know, why not me? You know, why can't maybe this be my day? And I was like, oh gosh, I get the chills, but I was like, if I just still see him when we get over this hill, then that's enough, you know, for me to go after it. And thinking back, like, it's just like somehow that day was just magical for me. And I caught him and just had a really strong finish and I won. And, you know, I shouldn't have won, you know, it's like the craziest thing ever. And that gave me a lot of just belief in that there was more, you know, just I think I had not believed that something like that could happen. And that was just a good day for me. Like, Joe's still, I would say, a much better runner than me, but to see that, you know, like where I was and in that stage of my career, that was a huge breakthrough And so it was like, wow, I am where I'm supposed to be in this. You know, this is a gift, a talent that I'm supposed to pursue. And then on the side of like ministry and on the side of giving back, the 50K treadmill record was unreal, like unreal, to the point that, you know, that thing went viral. I've never, ever gone, like, I've never been a popular runner. Like, that's just the reality. Like, I could tell you stories of like early in my career. And so to see that, like, the day I just kind of put all that down and just laid it down and just said, I don't even care about that stuff. I'm just gonna run for these kids that I love and that I go and coach and that I'm still so connected to. And then to see that thing just go, it was kind of like funny. Like, it was like, wow, like, you know, and in a way, sort of a realization, like, you know, like, I gotta stay in that place of not even caring about the you know, the publicity or the masses. It's like, it's about them, you know, it's about these kids. And so seeing what has come from that, the grants, seeing how the programs are getting better, the kids are getting to stay, all of that has just been this like kind of overflow and has really given me that evidence that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Making such a big difference. That's really cool. And it's what you least expect it, right? It's just like, you know, you've won all these big races and you've gotten all these awards, and then it's the 50K on the treadmill, like, world record. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they were texting me, like, you know, there was like this, like, even channel in Mexico that was posting about it that we watched as kids. And it was like, no way, you know, like, I was like, this is so, you know, like to completely be away from that now. And then to see it, you know, it was just like that. It just, you know, it unfolded in my life that way. And it's awesome too, at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is pretty awesome. Yeah.
It's like,
So bring it to the mental aspect of, you have the miles and the repetition. Now, we've heard some of your why. How do you, in the races or in the training, in the miles, what do you do to engage your mind, or do you go into a flow state, or what is your mental game like when you do these long, long runs and races?
The best even training sessions I've had have always been when there's a lot less on my mind, when I can really clear my mind and focus on very few things, and just being present, just being listening to my breathing, listening to my cadence, you know, telling myself that this isn't bad, that this is okay, that it's fun, and that it's not that painful. I try to stay positive. All of that really creates positive flow in us. And I know that there's times where I get to my runs and it's been a hard day and it's been difficult, or I've heard stories that are really difficult. And I know people that are going through some tough things, and sometimes I can't fully let them go, but I try. You know, I think just the fact that you're trying to clear your mind and trying to allow yourself, you know, this time of reset and this time of some clarity, it can be very therapeutic. And the thing I want to say is that it gets much easier the more you practice it. So it's not like you're just going to be like, oh, I'm going to clear my mind, I'm not going to think of anything, and you're just suddenly going to be able to do it. No. You have to be intentional about it, and you have to stick to it, and it totally gets better. You learn how to focus on just very few simple things. And if you're on a treadmill, it's really helpful to focus on just making that space around you positive, and just having the thoughts, but also just seeing it as like, you know, this space is nice. It's cozy. You know, it's not scary. It's just, it's warm. It's embracing me. I know it. I know every corner of it. And so the more you're accepting it, it's not going to feel so dreadful and draining, because that's the last thing you want, is for it to be draining you even more.
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot to digest there. So many good tips. Wow. So what would you say to someone who wants to listen to music or watch shows, podcasts? Is there a place for that? Would you advise to practice this more mindful flow? What would you say to that?
No, I think it's great. I think that a lot of times for me, I save like a podcast that I really want to listen to, or something, maybe some songs, or I listen to sometimes sermons, or just Bible teachings that are going chapter by chapter. And so I'll save those for either my easier days or kind of my steady state days. So like days that maybe I'm not going like high heart rate or tempo or lactate threshold, but that I'm just kind of staying in that steady zone. Those days, I think, have at it. I think that you can actually practice some of that that flow by focusing on what you're listening to, because then your mind goes there and you're really staying focused on just one thing, that and running. But on the days that you're gonna really push, I would highly recommend to not use them. So, you know, most coaches, most training plans are not going to tell you to go hard that many days in a week, right? It's maybe just like 2 days a week. So maybe 5 days a week, you have some music, you have some podcasts, and then 2 days a week, you just practice that stay in the zone and that clarity. And so for the 50K record, for example, I never listened to anything. There was some music playing in the gym, but I can honestly tell you, I don't remember much of it. But for the 100K, I knew that it was going to be 6-ish hours of running hard. And I knew the first hour or two would feel pretty easy. So those first few hours, I allowed myself to listen to some music, and then I turned them off and put them aside. And then it was game time from then on. Hopefully that's okay. Helpful. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Super helpful. Yeah. Yeah. I'm one who doesn't listen to much, because I do find that it helps me practice my focus, because I struggle with focus. So this is all like gold. So we appreciate you sharing about this. I know that a lot of our listeners will appreciate this like very practical advice on the mental game, because it's just such a hard thing as runners when we do have a lot of the self-doubt creep in, and we have these thoughts that are taking us away from joy, and it becomes like just a bad experience that we're like willingly putting ourselves through it. Like we're willingly doing this, you know, most of our listeners, we're not professional runners. So, we're willingly putting ourselves in this situation. So we want to find our best experience and being able to turn that running, that suffering that we somehow love.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah.
Into something that brings us joy as well. It's not going to be like happy every step, but like you said, there's a joy that's in that suffering.
Yeah.
And what does this teach us? What is, you know, I've heard you talk a little bit about how this we talk about this mental practice. How does this translate into life?
Wow. Yeah. That I feel like we could probably talk for like 2 hours on how amazing just running like is connected to life and what it teaches us. But if I were to take just a few of the things that I think are the most powerful, I think number one, you realize you can do more than you expected, you know, and that is for any runner at any level. When you see yourself accomplish something, it's so beautiful. You know, you saw something all the way through, and seeing that journey, even if you didn't train perfectly, even if your race execution wasn't exactly what you wanted to, when you see something through, it teaches you that you can get through life. You know, you can get through those difficult moments. You can set goals and achieve them, and you're stronger than you thought. So I love that. That's why it's been so cool to see what running has done to some of the young people I work with. And that has always been my goal. It's like for them to see it in themselves, like, gosh, you know, I am strong. I am a warrior. I can do this. I can be out in the mountains, you know, even if I am not moving as fast as everyone else, I'm getting through it. And I'm seeing the same things they're seeing, and I'm getting, you know, over these technical terrain too. It's like, it's such a cool connection there when they're learning to overcome. So that's one thing that just the sport teaches us. I think it teaches us the patience too, to really take that into other aspects of life, and that those good things are gonna sometimes take time and they're gonna take work. And, you know, we may have this amazing breakthrough and be like, hey, that was magic. And the reality is, for a lot of us, we'll be like, no, that also was a lot of hard work. And so there's a combination of both, you know, those really magical days that we're like, thank you that happened. And then other days where we're just going to be like, hey, you know, I also have been putting in all this work. And so there's a place for both. And I love, yeah, I can kind of go on and on, as you can tell, but I love that running also teaches us to connect, and that it kind of puts us, a lot of us, on the same level. Like, I've just seen a lot of people that come from different backgrounds be able to go on a run together and all of a sudden connect. And part of it is that they're suffering together, and they're like, hey, you're going through the same thing I'm going through. And so I can relate, and I can see you. And I appreciate you because you're with me, you know? And so I just think that this sport is the best thing in the world. There's nothing better than it. And it's simple, you know, just some shoes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time, Mario. I feel like we could ask you so many questions.
we could go on,
like you said, for hours, but we're so thankful that we had you on the show today. And on behalf of the audience too, like, we're just appreciative of your time and also what you do for our sport. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to Mario. The episode was chock full of great advice, practical tips. I'm really going to be honing in on my mental strategies and how I'm practicing the repetition when I, like, for the mental aspect, as he was talking about, like, with music and podcasts, not listening to those on your harder days and being able to hone in and really work on the mental aspect of races. And I think that was a really great takeaway for me.
That is, in fact, an area that I have been studying a little bit, the implications and effects of listening to things while we're running, music versus content versus, you know, there's kind of a range of things. And it's interesting.
It is really fascinating.
So, good advice from Mario.
Yes, yes. Very fascinating stuff. And I followed up with Mario and asked him the benefits of repetition because I didn't get to that question in the interview. And he gave a great answer. He said, I'd say one of the key benefits of repetition is it challenges you to become a faster and more economical runner. When I'm training on trails, it's harder to know exactly what type of effort I'm giving, but when I'm running on something repetitive, like a treadmill, track, even roads, I see exactly what pace I'm running. You really learn to be focused on more intrinsic feedback when you're not on trails, and that can be very beneficial to becoming a better runner. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that repetitive running makes me a better mountain runner.
Right on.
Yeah.
And the same can be true for all of us.
Yeah.
In fact.
So thanks again to Mario for all of this advice, and he's had such an incredible career, and it's one to keep following. He's got some great insights and some great messaging that also is very meaningful.
All right. Well, stick around because next up is the world of running.
This week in the world of running, one of my favorite pieces of news to come across in a very long time, a 105-year-old woman establishes a brand new world record in the 100 meter.
So traditionally, it's called a 100 meter dash. Is her record called the 100 meter dash record?
Yes. As I was reading articles, she is considered a sprinter. Yes.
My word.
Sprinter. 105 years old. Sprinter. Yes. Yeah.
So how old were you when you set your most recent sprint record? Yeah.
She says she doesn't often train doing many 100 meter sprints.
Train. She's 105. Nobody cares if she's training. She just did it. That's great.
She did it. And there were some challenges involved. At the Louisiana Senior Olympic Games, 105-year-old Julia Hawkins became the first woman and first American in her age group to run 100 meters.
Okay.
Now, the rules were she had to complete the distance and stay in her lane.
Oh.
So staying in her lane was difficult because she can't see more than about a foot in front of her.
Oh, man.
Due to her, you know, old age and the advancement of, you know, her deterioration of her
not
eyes.
Not only is her body 105 years old, her eyes are too.
Yeah. So she stayed in her lane, which, yeah, that was a really great thing too. And she was by herself. So she didn't have like other people on the track with her to like figure out where she was exactly. So that was also exciting that she went out and did this 100 meter dash by herself, but not because there was a lot of people cheering her on. Very exciting event. I'll link to the video because it was really cool.
Yes.
She says that it doesn't compare to many wonderful things in her life, like her 70 year long marriage to her husband, Murray.
I can imagine the interview there. What do you feel about your new world record? Well, it's not as great as my marriage. Okay. I wasn't
said,
really
she
asking
actually
it
did
to
say she was kind of like underenthused in the interview, saying like this is not a big deal, like, right. I've like my life is so much more than this, and I think that's some wisdom there. I think that we can all listen to is like, oh, this big accolade that everyone's like, she's amazing, this is like the highlight of your life, isn't it? For her to be like, no, life is very rich and meaningful, and my time that I had with my husband was one of those meaningful things. Kind of cool.
Perspective building. This is good.
Yeah. According to Runner's World, Mrs. Hawkins only took up running when she turned 100. Yeah. Because she says she ran out of people to compete against in cycling when she hit her late 90s.
Wait, so what you're saying is she was just too good? Too good for y'all.
Exactly. There's no one in her age group, I think. She wanted to like keep winning age group awards.
So she has my kind of mentality. Win at all costs.
So she literally
beat everyone else. This is going to sound so morbid. I should just stop now.
Yeah.
I was about to say something terribly morbid.
All right.
Okay.
So she was
anyway.
A former record holder in the 100 meters in, let's see, 2017 for her age group.
Wow.
But it was broken last year by another 100-year-old, Diane Friedman. So
that's it, Mrs. Hawkins. Friedman's coming for you.
Yeah. Just wow. Gotta outlive her, yeah. Julie's advice for other runners, stay healthy and keep running.
And that is just about the best advice you can get.
I mean, stay healthy. That's no small task.
Especially at 105.
Yeah. Amazing. Another amazingly heartwarming story coming your way. Another world record, too. The fastest marathon pushing a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And this is, again, from Runner's World. November 8 in Barcelona, Eric D'Amigo Roldan pushed his mother, Sylvia, who suffers from multiple sclerosis, in a blazing time. This is the full marathon, 2:53:28.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he beat the previous world record of 2 hours, 58 minutes, and 40 seconds.
5 minute improvement.
And he had gone for this record before and was over 3 hours. So not only did he get this record, but this is his first time breaking 3 hours pushing the wheelchair. So
that's
so
awesome.
Cool. And that he does it with his mother is a very, very neat thing. And she said this quote that I found in the article in Runner's World: "It fills me with life and gives me peace being able to see the landscapes. And above all, it gives me an incredible freedom."
Yes.
Freedom of movement. Yeah.
We've talked about that in the past with there's a group that some of you are familiar with, My Team Triumph, where it's essentially the goal is to be able to give people that opportunity to have that experience who couldn't otherwise. And it's so cool.
Yeah. And while we're on that note, Bill Johncock, Team Logan, we've had them on the podcast. Just such a cool story of a father-son duo team. And they ran the Boston Marathon recently. The qualifying time does not change based on the duo team. And he actually qualified with Boston in the qualifying time to do that.
Wait,
with
you still have
Logan.
To run the regular time, whether you're pushing something or not?
Yeah.
That's
so
something.
He and Logan both completed the Boston Marathon. So
right on.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, well, number three on our list this week is a preview, if you will, of an upcoming guest. So now you've got the sneak peek, and it's Stephanie Flippin. She'll be on the show soon, so stay tuned for that.
Subscribe.
But as it were, the timing couldn't be any better.
Not really,
because she's also just rocking the world in the ultra scene.
Yeah, so Stephanie Flippin was first female at Tunnel Hill. She was fourth overall between men and women in a time of 14:04.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is like...
This is a 100-mile race, folks.
This is under 8:30 per mile.
14 hours.
This is 100 miles. Wow. I feel like it's just like...
Let's just say that over and over again.
Yeah. So she won, and she defended her title from last year. So defending champ. And Stephanie is number two on the 100-mile list all time for women in the entire world. And this is what's the kicker to all of this. She PR'd at Tunnel Hill in her 50-mile run, 100K. And then, of course, the 100-mile distance.
So she ran faster for 100 miles than half the distance at 50 miles. Wow.
And this, it should be noted that she won the USATF 100-mile race this past year. So whatever was the most recent one. So anyway.
Taking the century by storm. Oh, I like that. Taking the century by storm.
Maybe we have a title.
She's the Centurion.
And this is a little...
She's the Centurion candidate. I'm going too far. That doesn't even work.
So finally, we do have an extra bonus one, because last week when we discussed the New York City Marathon and the news of it, we did not mention Shailene Flanagan. Not that she didn't deserve the... Who's that? She didn't deserve a lot of recognition, but we just had so many great things to talk about in last week's episode. This one too, but I'll be brief.
Are you saying Shailene's not a great thing to talk
about?
She
is. as you all know, Shailene retired from professional running about 2 years ago and
just
recovered.
Just in time for some knee surgeries.
Knee surgeries in 2020. And as she's been recovering and getting back to running, of course, she's a coach at Bowerman Track Club, running with athletes, and then kind of like doing some of these workouts. She got in her head that she's going to do this Project Eclipse, which is running 6 marathons in 42 days. It was supposed to be all the majors.
Is it called Project Eclipse because she's trying to eclipse everyone else's performances by doing something better because she did all of them?
I don't think that Shailene would say that. I don't think so.
But maybe her agent or PR people would?
Maybe. So Shailene did complete the 6 marathons in 42 days. Tokyo Marathon was, of course, canceled. We've mentioned that a few times. But she ran her own marathon in place of the Tokyo Marathon.
So she still
Portland.
Did the marathon.
Right.
She just didn't,
And so briefly, I just want to reflect on how amazing this woman is by giving her times just real quick. New York, she ran most recently her fastest time, 2:33:32. In Portland, which was in exchange
her
for
solo
Tokyo,
time.
2:35:14. Boston, 2:40:34. Chicago, 2:46:39. And why I wanted to mention this one and give you these at all is because she was very patient and conservative, knowing that the next day she was going to have to run Boston. She ran
London.
I'm sorry.
It was Chicago, then Boston.
Yeah.
We're doing it in the opposite order.
I know, but
gotcha.
I wanted to tell you, I wanted to tell them why the Chicago was so
because...
smart. It was so smart because it was back to back, right?
She ran another one the next
her
day.
Her splits in Chicago, this was her most conservative race. She ran 1:23:19 for her first half, and her second half was 1:23:20.
Positive split. Come on,
by Shailene. 1 second.
You could
but
do better
saying,
than that.
But like, you know what I'm saying, right? How I felt like that was a really smart thing because she'd been running in the 2:30s. So London, she ran 2:35:04. Berlin, she ran 2:38:32.
Wow.
So I'm reflecting on this because Shailene, after Berlin and London, she could have thought to herself, I want to run all of my marathons in the 2:30s, because it definitely was a possibility for her. But in Chicago, she really reeled it in, knowing that she's going to have to do two in a row. So very smart. I don't know if that was her her or, you know, advice from someone else telling her that that would be a good idea, but that was smart.
That is okay. So next time you're running a marathon, think to yourself, what would I do if I had to do this again tomorrow?
Don't ever think that in a marathon. I don't know how she did that mentally.
Yeah.
But I bet Mario does, seeing as how he...
Well,
he
there you
really,
go.
Really long.
And that is not a bad
races.
Way to take us full circle.
Yes.
And say, listen, these things are redundant. We're runners. Every time we take a step, it's just about the same thing as the one we did before that.
Yeah.
And so when we have opportunity to step back just a little bit and think to ourselves, how do we make this a better thing for us? We can appreciate these considerations from Mario on the show today, and then certainly an upcoming guest, Flippin' herself, to share from her experiences as well. And for all of us to continue thinking, what do I need to thrive? And it might just be heading to AtoZRunning.com, look for the word coaching.
Good plug there, Zach.
Absolutely is. All right, well, with that, we've certainly had a great time today, probably more fun than I should have, but we're thankful for you and your listening ears, and looking forward to the next time.
Yeah, talk to you next week.